Your weekly pulse on the Milwaukee Bucks, straight from a Bucks legend. This is Here District with Marcus Johnson, alongside his son and 1995 NCAA champion, Chris. Here's MJ.
All right, welcome everybody to the fantastic voyage here on Here District. I'm the captain of this vessel, Captain Marcus Johnson. I got my first mate, Chris Johnson, a couple of L.A. basketball icons. What's up, Stoddy Loco?
Man, I'm great. Excited about another great show. Love the fans. Love the support. Follow us at Bucks Plus Audio, baby.
Hey, we've got a great show lined up for you, as we always do. We're going to start off with Haris Stavro. Now, he writes for the number one website in Greece. He's known Giannis since he was 16 years old. He has seen more Giannis basketball games than Giannis' own mama, Veronica. And then joining us, Jacob Sutton, J. Sut Hoops at Substack. Now, he wrote a great article on the breakout players, breakout performers this season. Going to talk about Cole Anthony. He's going to talk about Ryan Rollins. Join us right here, Here District. All right, welcome to Here District. Marcus Johnson, Chris Johnson, the only father and son tandem in the history of college basketball to win a national championship at the same school. And man, hey, Chris, what's up, man? You doing good? Always got to give a shout out to my son there, my number one son. But listen, we are so thrilled, and let's jump right into it. I don't want to waste any time. I know this guy is busy. He's covering, where are you at, Cyprus or somewhere like that? Yeah. So Haris Stavro is, we thought he was senior editor, but he told me he got a promotion about 5 months ago, and he is now the managing editor of Sports 24. See how nervous I am? I'm just stumbling all over my words, Haris. This is how much respect I have for you. But the number one website in Greece, and he's the guy that's known Giannis since he was 16 years old. Welcome to Here District, man. Welcome.
Thank you very much for having me. It's a pleasure for me. Your voice is so familiar to me because every night I'm watching the games, the Bucks games, through NBA TV. I am enjoying so much your comments with Lisa. It's really my pleasure and my honor to be with you.
Well, tell me this, Haris, and I've been getting some blowback, I guess is a better word for it than feedback, but some blowback that I'm not like nice enough to the Bucks. That I like they say 50% of my comments are negative, and I talk down about the Bucks. And to me, it's almost a compliment because I don't want to be a homer. A homer is a broadcaster that just cheers for the team no matter how terrible they're playing. If they're sticking up the joint, man, I'm going to call it like I see it. I mean, what do you think? Give me a critique of my work. Do you feel like that I call it honestly as I see it?
You're doing great, to be honest. Sometimes you are a homer, especially when you're discussing the referee calls, the calls of the referees. But you're wonderful. Yes, I have watched the many teams on NBA TV. Some commentators are kind of biased, but I really enjoyed watching you and Lisa these last years.
Are you a big analytics guy? Do you like to hear analytics kind of sprinkle into the broadcast? I like to just include a bit of it, not go overboard with it, but I think the analytics are a big part of the game today. This is the modern game of basketball. What's your take on analytics? Where do you fall in terms of analytics?
You're right. It's the modern way to watch basketball. People, sometimes I'm having a podcast. It's called The Bold Brothers. You can understand why it's called like that. Most of the times I'm trying to keep it simple. I want people to understand, to have my opinion clear. But, you know, there are a lot of people who want to read more in-depth analysis. So I believe you just need a good balance. Everybody.
Right. Informed and entertained. And you can't overdo it because you don't want to bore your audience to sleep and have them totally left out of the conversation. But let's get right to it, man. Why we have you on. We want to talk about our guy, Giannis Antetokounmpo. I mean, tell me about your history with him, your background with Giannis.
My history is pretty simple. Somebody told me about Anasis many years ago. So I went to watch some Philathleticos games, their team back in the day. And that's all that skinny kid who was not playing. I started watching him since he was 16 years old in the under-18 team of Philatleticos. I still remember these games like it was a couple years ago, to be honest. I'm following Giannis since that day. I have watched like 1,000 games of the backs of Philatleticos, his games with the national team. But, you know, every day I say to myself, he has done everything. We have seen everything from him. And every day he has something new to offer. And you know it better than me. The other MJ, not a great one, he was saying that I have to be to bring my A game every night for the people who are paying a ticket to watch me on the court. So I feel that Giannis is that old school guy. He wants to bring his A game every single night. He wants to be the guy who will never stop, even if he plays a bad team, a tanking team, even if he plays LeBron James, even if he plays anybody. And that's what he was doing since he was 16 years old. I remember a couple of rivalries he had with some teams. With Panathinaikos, you might know Panathinaikos because it's a very big team in Europe. With Peristeri, with certain players. And he was bringing his A game every night, especially energy-wise.
Harris, how important do you think it is, first of all, this EuroBasket tournament, Giannis representing his home country of Greece, and then also playing with his brothers, Thanasis and Kostas?
It's very important for him. It was always very important for him to represent Greece. I get that many people don't really understand. I mean, people in the States or outside of Europe, they really don't understand how big is the EuroBasket for these players, for Giannis, for Luka, for Jokic, for all these superstars. In my opinion, EuroBasket is the best tournament in the world. You can't find a bigger tournament than this. The rivalries, Greece against Spain, all these teams, it's not about two teams. We have like 15 teams right now in Europe that really that play really good basketball. Even new teams like Estonia, like Latvia with Porzingis, everybody's playing basketball. But the feeling is very different, very different. I still remember what Giannis said after the EuroBasket 22, that he loved the game again. You know, after the championship in 21, maybe he didn't have that same motivation, let's say. But playing for Greece, he felt like rejuvenated, if I'm correct with the word. It's a different experience. Sometimes it's very hard to explain that to people outside of Europe, how big is the EuroBasket for these players? How big is for them to represent their country against countries from the same continent? I get the Olympic tournament is wonderful. It's really wonderful. And if you are an Olympian, you are like a god. But this tournament, the EuroBasket, is the biggest tournament you can ever find.
And it's been around a while, right? I mean, it's been around since, the 30s or 40s? I mean, it's been around forever, the EuroBasket tournament. So it's got a lot of tradition, a lot of rich history. And what is it about the crowds? Do they travel well? I mean, do you get a lot of international flavor in the crowds in Cyprus from different countries? And we lived in Italy, Chris and I and two of my younger sons and my wife. And it was just amazing, the passion. And we were in a small town, Udine, the southern part of Italy. And the fans, man, in terms of soccer and basketball, but more soccer at that time, the passion was just off the Richter in terms of how the fans got into it. Is that what you're seeing in Cyprus now? Is that one of the reasons why these players get so hyped up for it?
It's different. You know, the EuroBasket is like a different culture. You see certain countries like the Lithuanians, the Greeks, the Italians, they travel to watch and support their team. Here in Cyprus, the arena is pretty small. It's around, let's say, 8,000 people. Yesterday, Georgia had close to 2,000 people. Bosnia had close to 2,000 people. They traveled from Bosnia and from Georgia to Cyprus to support their team. And believe me, they are very passionate. You have to experience that to understand how passionate they are. It's a totally different culture. It's more It's not like the NBA, but it's more like the NCAA. You know, right. It's
March
a culture. It's
March,
a different
March,
culture.
March Madness. Yeah. March Madness and rah-rah and really getting into it.
Definitely. Definitely. It's the same passion. It's the same support. We're counting down the days for months. For months for the opening night of the Eurobasket. It's it gives me chills. Now I'm trying to explain to you to explain the feeling, and it's giving me chills. To it's something extraordinary for us.
Sure, Harris, help us back in the States understand that moment that we saw earlier in Eurobasket during the Greek practice when the players were all huddled up and Giannis ended up smacking one of his teammates in the back of his head. It kind of got everybody. It went viral out here in the States. People were like, what's going on in Greece? Can you help contextualize that incident?
It was crazy. Everybody was discussing about that, not just in Greece. I know it went viral everywhere around the world. But the guy Giannis slapped, I know it might look weird. It might look strange to somebody. But actually, Giannis and Giannoulis, that guy, Giannoulis Larijakis, they grew up together. They are very close friends. So Giannoulis Larijakis is a really authentic guy. He will always say what he feels. He will always say what he has in his mind, whatever this is. So he said something in the huddle. Giannis tried to explain to him that there was a camera behind him. Larijakis kept on talking. And he smacked him, but it was something between two guys who really grew up together, who are really friends, and there was nothing more than that. Everybody was laughing. Everybody. Yeah. I know most of the people saw a video with a certain angle, but there were videos from the other angle that showed that everybody was laughing. Even that guy, Larijakis, he was laughing. He was trying to understand what really happened. To people like me who really know how close they are, it was funny. For people who wanted to criticize or say something not good, it was the perfect opportunity to say something bad about Giannis.
Yeah, and you know, I had a flashback myself, and Chris, your grandfather, my father, he was coaching me, Harris, and I was about 10 years old. It was a one-point game. I missed the layup at the buzzer. Breakaway. I was celebrating too early. Blew the layup. Never missed a layup in my life. And so I was crying. I wouldn't shake the opponent's hand. And my father smacked me upside the back of the head, just like Giannis did his teammate. And I shook everybody's hands in that gym and referees' hands. I went outside and shook some people's hands who were parking. I was trying to shake everybody's hands. But no, it reminded me of that. But the other thing that the cultural difference is something that the Italian coach said that really bothered me, but I want you to help me put it in context because I'm sure it's a different perspective internationally than here in the States. He talked about stopping Giannis, and he said he had a friend who was a sniper, and he was going to call him up, and I told my coaches about it, and I know he was said in jest, but it's interesting that everything that's going on here, especially recently in Minneapolis, it's a lot of we're real sensitive to that kind of stuff. Did anything get made out of that? There's been some mention of it on Yahoo. Some other periodicals have picked up on it, but are they making a big deal out of that, or is it just kind of understood that he was trying to be funny and that's the end of it?
Yeah, I get it. It wasn't that funny, but Pacheco is the craziest guy in the history of the European basketball. I believe by far. When he was playing, he was dyeing his hair pink. He's very passionate, but he's very, how can I say that? He's very authentic. He loves the game. He loves the game. You can't imagine how much he loves the game. You might remember the other video with Pacheco and Giannis. Back in 2022 in the Eurobasket in Italy, in Milan, he was the guy that ran and jumped into Giannis.
Yeah,
you might remember that. He's the same guy. He's the same guy. He shows respect to everybody. He loves it. It's that guy who loves everybody. Right. He has no enemies. He's just very crazy. He tried to be funny, but I get that. it might was a little too much.
Yeah, they're starting to make a little bit of a deal. Now, he and Giannis have a relationship. Are they cool? I mean, I know he jumped in his arms after Italy beat somebody that they weren't supposed to beat, and he was all excited and ran up to Giannis, and I was hoping he wouldn't break his back or give him a back injury as forcefully as he jumped to his arms. But they seem to be on good terms. I mean, I'm not tripping on it. I'm not making a big deal out of it. But it was just something that caught my attention, and it's caught the attention of some of the basketball writers here in the States.
Ortega has a good relationship with everybody. I mean, everybody loves him. You know, he believes he's a friend of everybody. So, Greece played Italy like 2 weeks ago, 10 days ago in Athens, in a preparation game. And Giannis didn't play. At the end of the game, Pacheco went to Giannis and he was ready to jump into him again. But he was trying to Yeah. And Giannis was like that. He thought he will jump again. He's that guy.
Okay. All right.
Harris, Giannis's leadership, how it's evolved since 2015. Now he's alongside his ex-teammate, Spanoulis, who's now coach. Talk about how you've witnessed Giannis evolve as a leader over the last several years in European competition.
You know that there are types of leaderships. There are people who are leading by example. There are leaders who are very vocal. Giannis is leading. He's usually leading by example, and especially in the Greek team, he's trying to keep it to keep some balance. You don't see him talk too much to the other guys. He's just trying to lead by example, by his work. He goes first, he leaves last in the training sessions. You can see him before the games. He's not talking to anybody. He's fully focused on what he does. He played for the Greek national team for the first time back in 2013 in the under-20 Eurobasket, just like weeks after he was drafted from the Bucks. So he's been with the Greek national team for 12 years now. He's leading by example. He never talks. He never complains to the referees. He never complains to his teammates. He never complains to his coaches. He's always trying to listen to everybody. And he's a very different basketball player than other megastars. Tell me.
You talked about playing for the national team for 12 years now. So he's obviously established some really good relationships with the teammates. Now, the fact that he's had the kind of success he's had here, NBA champion, finals MVP, 50-point closeout game, two-time MVP, how do his teammates react to him? Any differently, or is it still the same Giannis that they've known through the years? Do they look at him with a little bit more sense of awe, or is it just doesn't even register as you might think it would?
That's a good question. And the truth is that he's that same guy. I remember one of his teammates, Panayotis Kalaitzakis, said, I believe in the media day of the training camp that he feels he has a Hall of Famer in the training camp, but he also feels that this player is playing for a small team in Greece because Giannis is very quiet. Yeah. He never talks. He doesn't want to talk. He doesn't care about anything, just want to win. In the last preparation game against France, there was a moment that a French guy slapped him really hard in the hand. The referees didn't call a foul, so he was a little, he was a little angry. It was the only moment I have seen him that angry with the Greek national team. His hand was really hurting. So he's trying to be the most normal person out there. He's just trying to concentrate on basketball. He just wants to win. And he wants it so badly. In every interview I'm doing with Giannis in the States, in Greece, he's talking about this. He wants a medal with the Greek national team. We don't have the best team. We don't have the best team, for sure. Serbia and Germany are a lot better right now. Yeah. But you never know what's going to happen in a single elimination game. But he wants that medal, and he wants it so bad, for many, many reasons.
Yeah, you know, he's playing with a young man, Tyler Dorsey, who played against my son when Tyler was in high school here in Pasadena, Maranatha High School. I saw something that he said about Giannis, and just the example, the work ethic. You talked about him being the first there, the last to leave. And that's what we've witnessed over here over the years, man, and that's why we love him so much. So in terms of the measure of success, if you can get a bronze, I mean, that would be newsworthy for Greece. I mean, just for this team to finish as high as third place in the Eurobasket tournament.
I don't care about the third place, to be honest.
Okay.
I want to be honest with you. I don't care about the third place. Our last medal was back in 2009. It's 60 years without a medal. A medal will be very important, but I don't care about that. We have the best player in the world.
Yeah.
It's simple as that. If you have the best player in the world, you have to aim for the stars. This is my opinion. And
okay.
I feel very, very good that this is coach's opinion too, because Vasilis Panoulis, we had an interview some months ago, maybe last summer, and he said, I wanted to be the head coach of the Greek national team to win the Eurobasket.
Wow.
Nobody says that, but Panoulis can say that, and he really believes he can do it. It's not easy. Of course it's not easy. We don't have the best team. I'm telling you again, but if you have the best player in the world, you have to aim for the stars. It is what it is, at least in my mind.
Yeah, you got a puncher's chance. Go ahead, Chris.
Sure.
Exactly.
Staying in that line, kind of my last question on the Eurobasket, in terms of national pride and Greek national pride in their basketball team, how do fans view the Antetokounmpos versus traditional Greek stars like Spanoulis or Gallus and others?
This is a tough question. And to be honest with you, I don't know. I don't have the answer, because you know that people still don't understand that a Greek guy can be black.
Yeah.
And I don't care about their opinion, to be honest. I don't care about their opinion. A Greek guy can be black. I don't know how to answer to your question. I'm honest with you.
Sure.
But you see, even Nick Gallis, they respect him so much. They call him Mr. Nick. Giannis is calling him Mr. Nick all the time. Gallis is very, like, if you call me Mr. Nick, I'm out. They're calling him Mr. Nick. I believe even Nick Gallis, if you ask him, he will say that Giannis has surpassed him. But it's a different era. It's basketball has changed so much.
Sure.
A long discussion. This is a long discussion.
Well, I mean, but you had Baby Shaq. Was he on that 2009 team? I mean, it's not like Giannis is the first
Black Greek
to excel in basketball. You've had an example of a guy like that before. I mean, but you say there's still some reservations from some Greeks about embracing Giannis fully because of the racial aspect.
You are right. There were players that were black before Giannis. Sophocles Chorchianidis. I know it's a difficult name for you to pronounce, but we defeated you guys with Sophocles back in 2006. Sorry for being guy.
I remember.
To bring it up again.
That's okay.
We had more black Greeks before Giannis.
Yeah.
And it was even tougher for them. It was even tougher for them.
Wow.
At some point, people will understand that a Greek guy can be black.
Yeah.
It's normal. At some point, everybody will feel okay with that. And if they don't feel okay, we just don't care about it.
And now, how are the other brothers doing? What's my guy Thanasis doing? How's the Achilles? What's he looking like? I think who's it? Kostas is there, I believe, also. Kostas, I saw him play at Dominican High School when he was a junior in high school out in Milwaukee. What are they looking like? And how they meshed into this component of Greek basketball?
Thanasis is flying out there. I really don't believe he ruptured his Achilles a year ago, and he's flying like that. He has so much energy. he's so thirsty. He wants to play basketball so bad. It's unbelievable how motivated he's all the time in every practice, in every game, against anybody. He's flying out there. It's impressive to watch a guy like him, and he's not young anymore. He's a little old. He's past his prime, but he plays with heart. And Kostas, he will play. He got a EuroLeague with Panathinaikos. He will play for Olympiakos next season. He will try to compete for the EuroLeague again. He's very athletic. He's trying, but he had so many injuries. He was a little bit unlucky during these last seasons. But he still has time. He's 28. He will be nice. He will be good.
Is he 28 already?
Yeah.
Jesus, time flies.
Time flies. Wow. Yeah, exactly.
He's 28. Man, God.
Do you think the Nassus is capable of you know, making the Milwaukee Bucks roster, or would he prefer to stay in Europe? Like, where do you think he is on that thought process?
Look, if he has a chance to play for the Bucks, he will go play for the Bucks. He loves the Bucks. He loves Milwaukee. He wants to be close to his brother. He was always supportive of Giannis. He would have had a great career in EuroLeague. I'm sure about that. He would be a really good player in EuroLeague. Maybe an undersized center. Yeah, he could be an undersized center in Europe. Wow. But he wanted to be with Giannis. He helped Giannis so much. He supported Giannis so much in difficult times, every day, in every practice, in every game. He was always there. Now, we will see what's going to happen. But if he wants to come back to Europe, he will have plenty of opportunities. He will have plenty of opportunities and options to decide which one fits him the best.
Well, and following along that line of questioning, so now I want the inside scoop here. We get it from people that don't really have that kind of connection with Giannis. They're talking about there's some possibilities of Giannis doing this, Giannis doing that. Where do you think Giannis winds up?
You mean
this season? Where? Okay, do we have anything to worry about here in Milwaukee? That's my question.
Whatever makes him happy. This is my answer in every question. I mean, whatever makes him happy and whatever makes anybody happy. We will see. If I was Giannis, I would finish my career in Milwaukee. I would stay in the same team for my whole career.
Yeah,
he's an old school guy. You know that. But we will see. We will see. I'm definitely not the one who knows anything or can estimate where he's gonna.
Yeah, no, and I was asking Harris, not to put you on the spot, but just from your knowledge and understanding of him as a person, knowing him since he was 16 years old, being on this incredible journey, that this fantastic voyage of his own that you've been on. I mean, you would have as good an insight as anybody to how he thinks, and that the point that you just made about, you know, finishes his career with the same team like Kobe did, like Dirk did. I think, and you tell me if I'm wrong, I think that means something to Giannis.
Yeah, definitely. This could mean a lot. But, you know, these kind of players, they want to win. And they want to win very badly. He just wants to win. He wants to be in a place that he will be able to play for the championship, to play deep in the playoffs, to have a long seasons. We will see. We will see. You know that everything can change from a week to the other week. Everything can change so fast. We will see. We will see.
Okay. All right, man. Well, look, man, enjoy the rest of the EuroLeague competition in Cyprus. I wish I was there chilling with you, watching it. And we appreciate you so much for joining us for a few moments here on Here District, man. Thank you. We got to get you back, too, once the season gets going, too.
Thank you. Thank you for having me. It was a pleasure and an honor. And the knockout phase will be in Riga, in Latvia, in Porzingis Arena. It's not the name of the arena, in Porzingis country. It might be a good opportunity for you to travel to Latvia and support Greece. And you never know. In the end of the competition, we might celebrate together. You never know.
I'll give John Horse a call right now and get him and put a bug in his ear. I need to be in Latvia.
Yeah.
All right, man. Thank you, man. Appreciate you. Have a great day.
Thank you very much.
All right, welcome back here, District Marcus Johnson, Chris Johnson, the only father and son tandem in the history of college basketball to win a national championship at the same school. Jacob, we got Jacob Sutton. Jay Sut Hoops is the name of his blog. Is that correct? You got a schoolie old guy. I can throw out all kinds.
Substack.
Jay Sut Hoops at
It's Substack. All good.
Yeah. Okay. Is that a blog? Is that a website?
I mean, it's a blog. It's a newsletter. It's whatever you want it to be.
I got you. What do you want it to be, man? You tell me. What do you want it to be referred to as?
Let's just say it's a newsletter. You know, I think it's the basketball newsletter that I talk ball. I'm a sicko, and I can talk about anything ranging from the food at the food court at the NBA Finals to guys that are playing really well under 10 minutes a game. So that's kind of my mini claim to fame, I suppose.
Well, I love that. And we like that kind of stuff. Chris has his own blog. Those four letters that basically, I told you, I can mess things up in a hurry, my own son. And those four letters, which I read faithfully, just like I read your J-Set Hoops. And the one thing, Jacob, that jumped out at me that I thought our fans really needed to hear us have a discussion on, man. You wrote a column, maybe the wrong word, but you wrote something about who will be this year's Dyson Daniels. And you listed three or four guys that you thought, you talk about the criteria, talk about the guys, and leave out the Milwaukee Buck guy for last. But just talk about that column that you wrote.
So essentially, my idea was this past season, Dyson Daniels was a phenomenal story, right? Racked up ridiculous amount of steals, looked like a pretty complete player for a guy that did not play tons beforehand. And I was thinking, you know, there's going to be a lot of these guys that continue to pop up, especially as the CBA, the new collective bargaining agreement, forces teams to get rid of young players a little earlier than they may have otherwise, right? And so my criteria, and it's a little malleable, is were they traded to a new team? Which, for example, in Dyson Daniels' case, that was the Pelicans to the Hawks. Now, I can also say, were they signed by a new team? Have they gone from a bench role to a full-time starting role, or have they gone from a reduced role to a potentially greater role? And are they on a not terrible team? So I'm not including any players on the Nets. I'm not including any players on the Wizards. It is only the teams that are at least semi-competitive. And the guys I'd come across, the first was Isaac Okoro, and he was traded to the Bulls for the Lonzo Ball swap. And, you know, I was like, well, you know, he's going to have the ball in his hands a little more. Lately, he's just been a catch and shoot guy. And now he's actually going to get the chance to kind of show what he's made of, right? And so I went through his profile, and then I went through D'Angelo Russell, which, once again, I bent my rules a little bit because D'Lo's had a big role with other teams, right? But with the Mavericks, he's going to have the ball in his hands a lot because Kyrie's going to be out, and I don't expect them to trust Jaden Hardy with the ball for 25-plus minutes a game. So it's going to be D'Lo.
Well, right? D'Lo was on that all-snitch team a few years ago, right?
That is true. I didn't want to bring that up, but that's true.
I digress. Go ahead, Jay. Go ahead.
And then my third and my last one was Cole Anthony. Okay. And with Cole Anthony, when I watched him on the Magic for, you know, a couple years, and he's still 25, he handles the ball really well. He is a good distributor, and he's got that dog in him, you know, he's got that mentality. And a lot of people, when you look at his stats, you're not very impressed with his assist numbers for a guard. And I kind of looked into that, and it turns out that he's actually very impressive as a passer for a guard. But the problem is how the Magic used him. So with the Magic, their biggest problem was they can't shoot. Like, they just can't. They have two forwards that can sometimes shoot, sometimes not, and everybody else, KCP, could suddenly not shoot for a season. And even with that, when you look at Cole Anthony's tracking data, when he drives to the rim, he is in the 87th percentile for passes off of drives. Okay. That pretty much means that he is one of the most frequent passers when he drives to the basket, right? So he's kicking the ball out, kind of like Fred VanVleet sort of thing. But he's in the 13th percentile from assists off of those passes. So what does that tell you? What that tells you is that he's passing the ball out and getting the ball to his teammates a lot without turning the ball over. They're just not knocking down shots. And that was one of the biggest problems that the Magic had. Now that he's with the Bucks, he's going to be in a system that is going to be phenomenal three-point shooting. Last year, they shot, I want to say, close to 38, 39%. Right, I don't have the stats right in front of me.
I think we're number one in the league, I believe, or close to it. Yeah, sure.
I believe so. I believe so. And now he's going to be surrounded by, you know, Gary Trent Jr. If they want to play, you know, both of them alongside each other. He's going to be surrounded by Miles Turner, who is possibly, for him, the best pick-and-pop threat you can have, just because Turner's such a good mover for his size, and he's able to get out to the perimeter really well and knock down shots. And I can, you know, rip off a couple other things where it's Cole Anthony has about 12 potential assists per 36. Now, this is a stat that not a lot of people talk about.
Yeah, that's right. That's where I want it to go, potential assists. Okay, break it down.
So potential assist is, and unless you really work in the league, and I don't, unless you really work in the league, you don't know exactly what this means. But the general consensus is that if a player passes to a teammate who shoots the ball and they don't make it, that's a potential assist. Because it didn't count, but the teammate was open enough to take the shot. And right now, last season for the Magic, Cole Anthony had 11.5 to 12 potential assists per 36 minutes.
Okay.
That is higher than Steph Curry, Jason Tatum, Fred VanVleet, Malik Monk, and Jordan Poole, who surprisingly racks up a lot of potential assists. It's also more than Donovan Mitchell, Tyrese Maxey, Jamal Murray, and Kyrie Irving. So what that tells me, based on when you look at the driving data as well, is that he's driving to the basket and he is kicking the ball out perfectly. He's not turning the ball over at a high rate, but only about 49% of those kickouts are resulting in assists, which is one of the lowest in the league. And that's the primary reason that I think the Bucks offense opens up his game so much, because it's so much better suited to how he wants to play the game than the Magic were. Because the Magic, it was, hey, you know, let's all get to the rim, and if we take a three, maybe we're going to make it, maybe not. And it's just, it's not reliable. So he's in a far better situation now.
Yeah, and one of the things about potential assists, Buck fans, and this is all off the top of my head, no notes in front of me, so I may get some of this wrong, but I believe against the Pacers, the one game that the first couple of games we lost, the games that we lost, Giannis's potential assists were way down, way down. I think the game that we won, they were way up. And so the idea is that he was looking to do a little bit too much for himself and not spraying the ball around like he normally did last season, when he averaged, I believe, a career high in assists, over six a game. So that's an important stat. The other thing about Cole Anthony, Jay said, that I really like is you talked about his heart, being a dog, but we've talked about this on this show. His defensive numbers, analytically, when you look at him, are not impressive overall. But when you put him with two bigs, you know, I looked at his defensive numbers, like with Banchero and Wagner on the floor at the same time. Two bigs, they jump up exponentially in terms of effectiveness. And that's what he's going to be involved with a lot with this Milwaukee Buck team, whether it's Giannis and Miles, or Bobby and Giannis, or Bobby and Miles, or whatever it happens to be. So it's just interesting how the numbers sometimes can not reflect some of the things that you want them to, until you kind of put them in a different situation.
Yes. And when you look at defensive stats, this is one thing that everybody has continued to have issues with and will continue to have issues with for years to come, is we don't know how to measure defense statistically. We can look at steals, we can look at blocks, we can look at a couple other things, but we don't really know. But when you watch the tape on Cole Anthony, one of the things you see is that he stays active off the ball enough to where he is preventing opposing guards from passing, especially when he's with, you know, two bigs or two large forwards, right? He's preventing them from passing to teammates. He's not causing a lot of turnovers, which is problematic in certain ways. But because he's surrounded by two guys with big wingspans, he's able to prevent the primary creator from passing out to other teammates. And I think that's something that goes unrecorded and a lot of people don't recognize. It's something that makes, like, Jokic such a good defender, for example, is his ability to deflect. And of course, they're completely different players. But if you look at Jokic's basic defensive numbers, it's like, oh, this guy's not a good defender. but he actually is because he does stuff that you can't really record in the box score.
Moving on to Giannis's mid-range, shot 44.2% on 4.2 attempts per game, which is pretty high up there. Defenses are now having to honor that shot. Do you think that next season, if Giannis continues to hit it at that type of clip, that this will open up the offensive dynamics of the Bucks? Do you think that this will have a direct effect on other guys becoming better players if he can consistently hit that jumper?
100%. The development of Giannis's jumper has been phenomenal over the past 24 months. He hasn't quite stretched it out to three yet. Maybe there's something in there, but like mid-range and long mid-range shots specifically, he has become pretty consistent and above average for a guy his size. And when you keep the defense honest, I suppose is what you would say, is you're then able to play him alongside players that you wouldn't be able to play him alongside otherwise. So, for example, a guy that I'm not entirely sure what to think of for this upcoming season, but I know is a very good talent, is Jericho Sims. And Jericho Sims currently on the depth chart would be, you know, maybe the second big, or, you know, maybe the third forward if you wanted to play him there. He doesn't have an outside game. But if some point during the season, the Bucks decide, hey, Giannis is hitting his mid-range shots and he's spacing the floor a little bit more, we have Miles Turner, what if we just play Jericho Sims out there and we play massive basketball, right? Because everybody's trying to play small ball, but then also you look at the Cavs, they're just massive. You look at the Magic, they're massive. And I think that allows you to experiment in a lot of other ways. I don't know if that will cause a lot of success more than normal in the regular season, but I think in the postseason, it becomes a really big problem for other teams because to this point, everybody's been playing a wall against Giannis. You come into the playoffs, it's like, hey, we're going to stay in the paint and we're just going to let you come to me. And if Giannis can suddenly step up to just inside the arc and hit mid-range shots, that opens up so much more for the Bucks in the playoffs when stopping Giannis has been, it's never easy to stop Giannis, but it's easier to stop Giannis in the playoffs than it is in the regular season. And him hitting those mid-range shots completely negates the wall strategy of opposing teams.
Well, and so he shot 47% on long mid-range shots, which is the 70th percentile, which is outstanding. There was only like, I think, four or five guys last season that made more mid-range shots than he made, Shea and Booker and KD and guys like that, DeMar DeRozan. It's been really nothing short of phenomenal. But to your point, in terms of playing big, it's interesting because there was this conventional wisdom that you play big, you give up transition buckets. But now, Jay said, it's kind of shifted towards if you play big and you attack the offensive glass, and you use your body to herd that guy who's blocking you out toward the basket, now you can negate some of that transition effectiveness of your opponent. So there's almost a win-win situation. If handled properly, playing big, especially when the game slows down to a crawl, half-court basketball sometimes in the playoffs, I mean, there's some advantages to that big lineup that you talked about.
I mean, that's something you're going to see with the Magic a lot this year. You're going to see it a lot with the Cavs. You're going to see it with the Rockets, particularly. Switchability is the name of the game, right? And as players are not necessarily getting taller, but they are getting faster compared to their height. So right now in today's NBA, you can play bigger and still not give up as many transition opportunities because guys are more mobile, right? Yeah. Giannis is 30, you know, he's going to lose a step as he ages, but right now he looks fine. You're going to have Miles Turner, who can move pretty well for a guy his size. And if you have two guys that you can play at the same time that are both that mobile, and by no means is Miles Turner a phenomenal isolation defender, but he's a phenomenal rim protector. And when you're able to have both those guys at the same time getting boards and then just running, Giannis will run down and Miles Turner will throw a touchdown pass. He can pass. So when you have both those guys out on the floor, it's not really a problem that you're playing quote unquote too big. And that's something you're going to see with a lot of other teams is that too big is, it's kind of an excuse for just being bad. I hate to say it, but like you can't really be too big in today's NBA.
Yeah. You also wrote a really great article about high offensive minded guards that don't play a lot of defense. And so you look at Anfernee Simons moving on to Boston, and you know, we're not sure what's going to happen with him. I mean, Cam Thomas, a great offensive player, suspect defense. Malik Monk, I heard there were some mention about maybe swapping him for Westbrook or somebody. I just heard a rumor, but talk about that dynamic that you wrote about.
It's a really tough thing, right? Because I think teams are still trying to figure out what to do with the new apron rules financially. Yeah. And they're beginning to see that a lot of these players that they would have spent a lot of money on before because of their high offense, they're less likely to spend money on now because they're afraid of the risks associated with it. So Cam Thomas, for example, phenomenal offensive talent, probably like as a pure volume scorer, one of the best young players in the league. Defensively, he's horrendous. And a lot of that for the Nets, that has not mattered. And for other teams that are competing that could spend money on Cam Thomas, that does matter because it's very hard to win a championship with your lead guard being a terrible defender. You see it with, you know, a lot of teams that try to compete with a guy like Zach LaVine or a guy like Kobe White, both, you know, previous Bulls guys and Kobe White, current Bulls guy. You're going to see it with the Kings as well now that they have Zach LaVine and they have, you know, relatively poor defender in DeMar DeRozan, but that's besides the point. A lot of teams are beginning to realize that you need to be able to play defense in the playoffs to at least an average degree as a lead guard to be able to compete, because otherwise you will get absolutely demolished. And I think that's going to be one of the key things for Cole Anthony, for example. Like I said, I think he is a better defender than people give him credit for, but he's still attackable in a lot of ways. And as teams begin to devalue these volume scorers that do not know how to consistently get stops or at least lead their team to get stops, you're going to see guys like Anfernee Simons be given away for scraps. And I don't see that changing. And honestly, that may become the new norm because there's been no evidence to this point that you can win a championship with your lead guard being unable to defend. And as much as I hate to say it, I love the guy, but Jalen Brunson is a good example right now where the Knicks have not been able to win a championship yet. They may still do it. And I think it's a lot because Jalen Brunson, in the time that he's been there, is very hard to build around defensively.
Well, and we kind of went through that, Chris, with Dame last year. I mean, it's, you know, when you swap out Drew Holiday, one of the best point of attack defenders ever, and you got Dame, who, you know, gave an honest effort. Let me throw that out there. But that was not his forte. To that point, let's talk about this current Bucks roster. Everybody, to me, man, Jay said they're overlooking one guy that kind of fits the all the qualifications, checks the boxes that you're talking about. Nobody mentions his name, Ryan Rollins. I mean, where do you think he fits in all this? You talk about Cole, you talk about KPJ and all these other guys. Ryan Rollins is a hell of a defensive player, man.
Ryan Rollins is a very good defensive player. And I think the main thing with Rollins is I'm looking up some of his, you know, advanced metrics right now, and he's by, let's say, real estimated plus minus, which is one of my favorite all-in-one advanced metrics. No advanced metric is perfect, but XRAPM, created by Jeremiah Sengelman, who is also on Substack, very good metric. Ryan Rollins ranks in like the 70th percentile for all NBA players, and he's in close to the 80th percentile for defense. And when you look at a guy like him that is so good at defending, and he's switchable despite the fact that he's not very tall. And it's one of those, he's one of those molds that players that are pests, right? Yeah. And they're just mosquitoes. And you hate to match up with them, not because they're necessarily going to block tons of shots or they're going to, you know, really like play bully ball. You just hate to be around them because they're all up in your grill. Right. And Ryan Rollins is a good example of that. Ryan Dunn on the Suns is a very good example of that. Matisse Thybulle, who I believe he's there with Trailblazers or the Sixers now, for some reason that just blanked my mind. But these kind of guys that are pests, right? The problem is that if Ryan Rollins is on the floor, you have to decide who do you want to play him with? Yeah. Because if you play him with Cole Anthony, that's fine. And I think he could work with Cole Anthony. Cole Anthony, you can't really switch onto his matchup and absolutely demolish him. And also there's the thing of Ryan Rollins is young, and the Bucks, for some reason, don't seem to care to play their young guys, kind of like a Tom Thibodeau complex, and I don't know if that'll change this season. So all that being said, Ryan Rollins is a phenomenal defender. I don't know if they give him the minutes that he needs to actually thrive, especially when it comes into late game situations. Because like you know, like you said, a lot of people ignore him. And I think that's just because they have a couple guards that they've invested a lot of money into, and not tons of money, but enough into to where you almost have the obligation to play them.
Well, look, man, we appreciate you coming by and dropping some of that analytical knowledge on us. Some of those numbers, I got to look those up because a few of those, I hadn't heard of those stats, man, but that's good stuff. Continued success to you, J. Sud Hoops on Substack. I love reading your stuff, and you really kind of do a good job of just driving the major points home that I like to talk about, and we enjoyed having you, man. So success to you, man, and let's circle back once this season gets cranked up. Appreciate you.
Yes, it's been an honor.
Thank you.